This is the Big E Sports Show on SB Nation Radio.
And online at SBNationLive.com.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Houston, here's Alyssa Walker-Campbell.
Okay, welcome back. Hour 2, SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. Hanging out with us in studio tonight is our producer, Brendan Riley. And Brendan's got a big weekend. He is going to be at the game, Bills at the Texans NRG Stadium on Saturday. Hour one, we talked a little bit about that. We were talking about how the Bills perhaps are one of the biggest surprise teams this past season. But I think one of the big storylines going into this, as we talk about the Texans, Brendan, is the return of J.J. Watt. He will be active. What kind of time do you anticipate that he will play on Saturday?
So it's going to be interesting because when he got hurt, I thought the story was that he was done for the season. From what I've read, it looks like he's going to be used situationally. So you figure third downs, 2-minute warning when you have key passing situations, and maybe late in the game if it's close. I can't imagine he's going to be out there a ton. What I actually would wonder is I would kind of look at what Khalil Mack did last year in his first game with the Bears, where he was traded so shortly before the game. You know, maybe he's out there on 30% of snaps. That's totally just a guess. I don't have any inside information.
Yeah.
But just key passing downs.
Well, we talk a little bit about, as far as the Bills and the Texans, I also want you to weigh in on the Seahawks and the Eagles. I mean, the Eagles, we've talked about it many times on the show. I mean, they've been pretty banged up. Do you think they can pull off an upset?
You know what? I think that
Come on, what do you think, Brendan?
Got a really favorable matchup in that. The Seahawks, they're a really good football team, but I think that they're a clear step below. It's in the NFC, the two worst teams are the Eagles and the Seahawks, and then the other four teams, I think, are very clearly a step ahead. So I think they're good enough to beat the Seahawks. And here's the thing. I talked in the first hour about the home field advantage the Saints have.
Uh-huh.
The Eagles are just as good. And the other thing is the Eagles are playing well late in the season. This is a team that's really gotten it going. Now, they got a lot of injuries. They got a lot of key players out. But they've had some time to kind of figure it out. They got a great coach. I'm not willing to go quite as far as picking the Eagles to win. But I think it's a coin toss.
It's going to be a lot of fun to watch for sure. And while we have you kicking us off here in hour two, come on, Brendan, you've got to weigh in on what in the world is going on with the Dallas Cowboys. They obviously have a lot of things to clear up in the offseason. So who would be the perfect coach?
I mean, that's not a fair question. I think more coaches fail than not. The difference is most of them don't get 9 years to do it.
Okay, we've got you covered here in hour two, SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. We will be right back.
This is the Big E Sports Show on SB Nation Radio. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Houston, here's Alyssa Walker-Campbell.
Okay, welcome back. Hour 2, SB Nation Radio, the next generation of sports radio, the Big E Sports Show. Many different ways to connect with us. We love hearing from you at eRadio Sports Info, eRadioSports.com, and podcast. arena.com. Always got to take time, recognize the folks that make it happen, and we want you to be prepared for road trips. So before your travel begins, visit O'Reilly Auto Parts. Simple preventative maintenance before you go will ensure a safe journey. O'Reilly Auto parts, better prices every day. Well, I know tonight we're getting you ready for the national championship game, Clemson Tigers, LSU, Monday night, 8 o'clock Eastern time kickoff. We have also talked some NFL, but you know what? We're going to do a hard crossover, completely shift gears. We're going to talk some lacrosse, and we are thrilled to have with us, that is the head coach and general manager of the New York Riptide, that is Reggie Thorpe. Their season is underway. They are four games in on an 18-game season, and it's his first time on the program. Good evening, Coach Thorpe.
Thanks. Appreciate you having us on.
Well, it's good to have you with us tonight. And the New York Riptide, they launched in the National Lacrosse League this year. So what has it been like for you building a team from scratch from both personnel and just from a coaching perspective? Tell us about it.
I mean, it's obviously been a lot of work, you know, on everyone's end, the ownership, the coaches, the players. You know, it's a challenge for sure. Being an expansion team takes a lot of work, but, you know, we're taking a long-term approach, building through the expansion draft, free agency, entry draft, and working hard on the process.
You know, you talk about a long-term approach, building this organization and your team. The Riptide, they play their home games, at the Nassau Coliseum on Long Island, New York. which, as I understand, that's a hotbed for youth and scholastic lacrosse. So has your organization, have you guys partnered with youth lacrosse programs and athletes to, you know, kind of build that excitement and build the momentum for the Riptide?
Yeah, I mean, our staff and our GF Sports Ownership Group, you know, we built an advisory board of youth and high school club coaches, former lacrosse players that played in the pros and different organizations throughout Long Island and the tri-state area. In addition, you know, we have players in market, you know, going out and meeting with different organizations and the teams and doing clinics with them. So our grassroots efforts are all over Long Island tri-state area, and we're excited to keep growing the New York Riptide brand.
You're listening to The Voice, Reggie Thorpe, head coach, general manager of the New York Riptide. That's right. We are talking lacrosse. And Coach Thorpe, he has a very impressive resume, 20 years of experience in lacrosse, including your current role as head coach of the U.S. indoor lacrosse team and former associate head coach of the Syracuse women's team. So tell me this, let's be a little reflective right now, Reggie. How is coaching professional players, how is that different?
I think it's, you know, we're not together all week long. So most of the guys have full-time job occupations. So they're coming in on the weekend, typically a travel day is a Thursday, Friday morning. So we get together on Friday night for practice, you know, usually some type of shoot around on Saturday. Typically you play Saturday night there. So certainly it's a lot of prep and individual work during the week, you know, online film. We have, you know, conference calls with the players. And so it's a lot of just out of the arena prep work that takes place during the week. So certainly technology is great that way with the computers and Zoom calls and stuff like that to prepare the guys.
You know, I mentioned in the open, you are not only the head coach, but you're also the general manager of this lacrosse, the New York Riptide. What's your biggest challenge?
Just being new. I mean, our inexperience, you know, our experience on our team is on the average. You know, we have, we built through free agency and the entry draft, which are first year players, a lot of them. And then we were able to go in the expansion draft and get a couple of veteran players. But our average experience on our roster is a little under 2 years experience and the teams you're playing, I mean, these guys, they have a lot of experience. They've been playing some for 8, 9, 10 years there. So certainly just the experience getting that up. But we're 4 games in and we're battling hard to get better every week. So we're hoping we're home this weekend against Philly. We're hoping to come out and play a tough Philly team. And hopefully 4 games in, we start picking up that more experience in our learning.
Okay, we're talking lacrosse with the head coach and general manager of the New York Riptide. Reggie Thorpe is with us tonight at SB Nation Radio. And so I don't have your roster in front of me, but if we were to look at it, you know, tell me about the players that are on that. I mean, do you have international players? I mean, what's the composition of this roster?
Yeah, I mean, we have players from, Ontario, Canada, Western Canada, British Columbia. We have local players from the States, as well as, we have a good group, pretty diverse group from all over. So, but our mix of players is mostly Americans, Canadians, and Native Americans in our roster.
You were the captain of the 1993 Syracuse National Championship team. Let's talk about just how much has the sport, the game of lacrosse, how much has it changed over, let's say, the past 25 years?
Well, I think, you know, back then, and again, that's a lot of years ago. But
I didn't say that, Reggie. You did.
I know. Technology, you know, I mean, there wasn't a lot of, you know, game film, computers, and technology back when I played there. So certainly now with the technology and all the film that teams and how you prepare is certainly probably the biggest thing. But the game, you know, and then as far as the players, you know, I mean, players just seem to be, you know, bigger, faster, stronger. The fitness level is crazy. Just much like in football, where these linemen are huge, but they're still running a, you know, 4-something, you know, 40-yard dash. So certainly the speed of the game has changed. It seems to be a lot quicker. There's a shot clock now in collegiate lacrosse. So back when I played, there wasn't a shot clock. But definitely the technology and then just the fitness of the players certainly has changed over the years.
You know, talking about collegiate lacrosse, I mentioned you're the former associate head coach of the Syracuse women's team. What was that experience like in working with women?
It was great. I did it 10 years, worked with Coach Gate.
Nice. And, okay.
We had we had a lot of success over those 10 years, you know, a lot of Final Four. We had 7-8 Final Four runs out of those 10 years, a couple championship games. You know, we came up a little short in a couple of the national championship games, but it was great. It was a ton of fun and loved being there. And just coaching for your alma mater certainly was special. And like I said, we were pretty young last year, and now that I'm with the Riptide, I'm wishing them the best of luck. And they'll be loaded for bear this year. They got everyone returning and have a pretty good recruiting class in. So certainly left the place in good standings, and as far as the recruiting class, so you know they should be a great year for them.
Reggie Thorpe, head coach, general manager of the New York Riptide. We're talking lacrosse tonight, SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. If you're just tuning in, chime in. You can join us at Twitter at E Radio Sports. Where can we go? You know, social media. Where can we find you guys online? How can we track the New York Riptide?
Just NewYorkRiptide.com. You can go to the National Lacrosse League, and our link's right on there. You can go to our Instagram page, Twitter page, NewYorkRiptide.com. And like I said, you can go to the National Lacrosse League, the NLL, and link from there. So we'd love to have people visit and come check us out.
You know, I was sharing with you off air, my niece, Clara Ann, she has picked up the sport of lacrosse and absolutely loves it. So let's talk about now as far as National Lacrosse League. I mean, what kind of growth do you anticipate here in North America over the next, let's say, 5 to 10 years? It seems like it's really getting hot and it's catching on.
Yeah, I mean, for sure. I mean, Commissioner Nick and the Board of Governors and the ownership groups have an aggressive plan they've been doing. And we're 13 teams right now, and you know they're talking all kinds of talks for expansion teams and building out all across the country as well as Canada and different markets. So it's just an exciting time to be part of the NLL and its growth and what the commissioner and the ownership groups have been doing. So the growth, like I said, over the next 5-10 years is just going to be booming.
Oh, it's all about educating ourselves too. So kind of help me out here, Reggie. So for those of our listeners, we're down here in Texas, in Houston. And if you're not familiar with the sport, I mean, what are the main differences between, let's say, box lacrosse and, say, field lacrosse? Help us out.
Well, first of all, my daughter moved to Austin, Texas 4 years ago after playing for me at Syracuse. My daughter,
she did?
Ella, there.
So, okay,
so
nice.
Look, lacrosse has been growing in Texas, big time in Dallas and Austin and Houston there. So certainly, it's growing there. But for the fan, field lacrosse is played with 9 players in a goalie on a field, so 10 total players, on a large field. Whereas box lacrosse is played in a hockey rink, 5-on-5 with a goalie, and you also have a 30-second shot clock. So ball's never out of bounds unless it goes up over the boards, much like hockey there. So certainly exciting to play, to watch, and to coach. And it's just a fast, fast game, hard hitting, and action, end-to-end action.
Good stuff tonight. Reggie Thorpe, head coach, general manager of the New York Riptide. As he said, you can follow him online. Listen, good luck in 2020. Finish the season strong. And we will reconvene. Let's talk in the month of April and see where you guys are at. Okay? Thank you so much.
All right. Thanks. Appreciate it.
You bet. Much more coming your way. SB Nation Radio.
This is the Big E Sports Show on SB Nation Radio. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Houston. Here's Alyssa Walker-Campbell.
Okay, Friday night, welcome back, SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. I'm your host, Alyssa Walker-Campbell. Many different ways to connect. We'd love to hear from you. Join us at Twitter, at eradiosportsinfo, eradiosports.com, and podcastarena.com. Always need to pause. Recognize the folks that make it happen, and you can trust the friendly, knowledgeable parts professionals at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Their professionals know what it takes to get the job done right. Professional technicians have counted on O'Reilly Auto Parts for years. Come see for yourself. O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day. Well, the postseason of college football, it has been so much fun to cover, and right now we're going to take time to recap Mack Brown's Tar Heels as they dominated Temple in the Military Bowl and finished the 2019 season with a winning record. Delighted to have back with us, first year as the offensive coordinator, the quarterback's coach for the Tar Heels, and that is Coach Phil Longo. Thank you for joining us, Coach, and Happy New Year.
Well, Happy New Year to you, too. Glad to be here.
It's wonderful to have you on, and all I can say is, We followed you. I mean, what a year for North Carolina. You guys had that big win, 55-13, in the Military Bowl over Temple last Friday. And as a result, the Tar Heels finished with a 7-6 record. That's the first winning season since 2016. And it's also the Tar Heels' first bowl win since 2013. So this is a program, as we step back and we look at it, it's definitely on the rise. This was your first year as the offensive coordinator. What did you learn about this team and the players and this program?
Well, it was interesting because from the day we got there, the plan was pretty clearly laid out by Mac Brown. And, you know, the staff has just so much confidence in how long he's been doing this and how high of a level he's been doing this. And he's won everywhere he's ever been. And so any time a problem or an obstacle arose, you know, he's got the template, he has the plan, he has the experience. So, you know, you basically sit in staff meetings and he lays it out, and, you know, it's our job as a staff to go out and execute it. And I think what we learned early on with our players was we've got guys that play really hard. And I know that sounds like rhetoric, but it's hard to get a team to play hard four quarters every game, every week, without letdowns or not taking an opponent seriously or maybe not playing as physical as you want to week in and week out. And it's a credit to our locker room. They were able to do that all season, and I think that's a big reason why we were in every single game that we played.
Yeah, and you know, Phil, it's just incredible to think how far this program has come in 12 months. I mean, massive change took place. I mean, you have a new coach, new coaching staff, and like you said, I mean, you really tip your hat to your leader, and that is head coach Mac Brown. And I mean, you just, when there's coaching changes, you never know how it all is going to ultimately play out, and you just, as player, you don't know what to expect.
You don't, and it took a while in the spring to get to know our players. And, you know, one of the things we talked to them about is we need a year of blind faith. You can't take a year to learn to trust somebody in football because, you know, there's going to be a lot of losses behind you if you do that. And so, you know, we had to trust the players right away. They had to trust the process and trust us, and that happened in the spring. I think we got to know each other relatively well, and our guys put in a huge summer, which had a drastic effect on the season. And then I do, and this is a credit to the rest of the staff. I think it's a sign of a good staff and a high character team when you get better every single week. And we felt like we did. And so the team that we took to the Military Bowl to play Temple was a team that I can confidently say was 13 weeks better than it was the day we started the season.
The offensive coordinator, the quarterback's coach for the North Carolina Tar Heels, Phil Longo, is with us tonight, SB Nation Radio, the Big East Sports Show. Hey, you can chime in on the conversation. You know what? Give Phil a follow, at Coach Longo. You can join him on Twitter. And so, Coach, for you personally, I mean, what was it like to have the opportunity to work with, you know, such a legendary coach in Mac Brown, who returned to UNC and is back in the game, what, after taking, what, a five-year hiatus?
If you gave me, if you asked me, you know, what are five things that I wanted to do in college football, one of them would have been, you know, to work for a guy like Mac Brown. And so for him to come out of retirement and have an opportunity, after speaking with Cliff Kingsbury about him, to go out to North Carolina and be the offensive coordinator for the Tar Heels, you know, fulfills one of those things that I'd like to do in college ball. And I've worked for a lot of great people, and this is not a knock on any of them. I respect tremendously a number of coaches I've worked for, but, you know, Mac is just a cut above. He is he's as good a football coach and a leader of a program as I've ever worked for. And so, I get up every day excited about going to work.
Mm-hmm. Hey, glad you're with us tonight. SB Nation Radio, the Big East Sports Show, offensive coordinator, quarterbacks coach. You're hearing from him. Phil Longo is with us tonight. And, you know, just high praise for Mac Brown, 14-8 in bowl games, and just how he unifies a team. He unifies players. They're obviously very confident. What do you anticipate going forward?
Well, it's nice to have a veteran quarterback returning. We didn't have that this year, and so we went with starting a true freshman in Sam Howell out of Charlotte, North Carolina. And now that the season's over and he has 13 games under his belt, and he, like the team, improved every week over the 13-game season, you know, he's going to lead a young group of offensive players back next year. We'll lose a left tackle and a running back. Those are the two players that had substantial time. We'll lose a couple of tight ends. But there's, I would say, 80 to 85% of our starting offense will return next year. And so, you know, we expect to be better and we expect to look like a more of a veteran group. And, you know, I'm excited about the 2020 season.
I'm glad you bring up your quarterback in Sam Howell, because we have to share this story again. Last time you were on the program, I asked you and we discussed the fact that the starting quarterback position had not been solidified. You know, just talk about the impact that he had and how he was able to just make such a difference so quickly. And how were you able to get him comfortable?
Well, in the spring, we weren't going to name a starter. We told him all that. The order of business in the spring was for the three guys that we had, all freshmen, learn the offense and give you, and that's the prerequisite. It's kind of hard to compete for a starting job when you don't know the system. And so we asked them all to learn it. And when we told them to get back in August, you're going to be competing to be the starting quarterback on opening day against South Carolina. And just as camp went through its own process in August, Sam kind of distanced himself a little bit from the other two and wound up being named the starter, and we named him the starter a couple weeks before South Carolina. He led us, you know, in an opening day victory over South Carolina at, you know, in Charlotte. And so I think it's a credit to his maturity and his how humble he is and how willing he is to grind every week. Never let the spotlight affect him. You would never know by his body language whether up by 40 or down by 40. You can't tell. And I think that the level of calm and poise that he has is a huge asset when he's on the field playing.
You know, when we talk about your quarterback, Sam Howell, you're exactly right. I mean, his maturity, his confidence, and he engineered some big fourth quarter comebacks. He had that, I like to say, that be ready mentality from the start when you took him under your wing.
Well, he's a consummate professional, but he's highly, highly competitive. And it comes out in practice every day. You know, he competes at little games before practice, little games after practice. He's extremely competitive throughout in every single drill that we do. It just shows that his mentality, he enjoys competition. And obviously when the stage is bigger, he's hungry for it. And I think he really looks to Saturday's game, you know, to fulfill a need that he has, and that's to compete at a high level and, you know, and prove that he can be better than somebody else. And I think he's going to be a really good leader for this program in the offseason.
You know, it's interesting, Coach, we've talked a lot about your offense, but the Tar Heels defense was very good in the Military Bowl. How would you summarize that defensive performance against Temple?
Well, you know, we got more physical as the year went on, and Coach Bateman did a fantastic job improving the defense week to week. And you know, that's how you win championships. You win championships by being able to play on both sides of the football. And it's such a comfort knowing that, you know, on a particular Saturday, if we're not playing at our best, we've got a defense on the other side of the ball that has our back. And that's how we feel about our defense. And I know that's how they feel about us. And so that's the way you win games as a team. And I'm, you know, we're very, very confident with the defense and the personnel that's coming back. And I know Coach Bateman is looking forward to next season as much as I am.
As we look ahead to the future, I mean, what are the priorities going to be in the off season?
Well, it's always recruiting. Recruiting is always, never ends. And it's, you know, you want to upgrade or elevate your program. You got to do it through recruiting. You want to maintain a level of success over a long period of time. You got to do that through recruiting. So we're ecstatic about our class here in December. We may sign a couple more here in January, but we're already very, very heavily involved in 21 and 22 recruiting. And I think that's the absolute key to this program outside of player development in the spring leading into the 2020 season.
Okay. Give us a quick hit on the big game, the national championship with Clemson and LSU on Monday. How do you think that game's going to play out?
It'll be interesting. I think both offenses are high powered and have a lot of talent. I think both defenses have major challenges. And I think the team that plays better defense in that game will be the team that wins the ballgame.
The offensive coordinator, quarterbacks coach for the North Carolina Tar Heels, Phil Longo, has been with us tonight. SB Nation Radio, the Big East Sports Show. Continued success, and we look forward to another conversation in 2020. Thank you so much.
Yes, ma'am. You have a good evening.
Absolutely. Much more coming your way. SB Nation Radio.
This is the Big E Sports Show on SB Nation Radio, live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Houston. Here's Alyssa Walker-Campbell.
Okay, Friday night, welcome back. SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. Happy New Year. And before we get underway with our next segment, you know what? We've got to recognize the folks that make it happen at the next generation of sports radio, SB Nation. And that is O'Reilly Auto Parts, where you are guaranteed to get the everyday low price on the parts that you need. O'Reilly Auto Parts will match any local auto parts store price on any like item. O'Reilly Auto Parts has the parts you need at the guaranteed lowest price. O'Reilly Auto parts, better prices every day. Well, we've got you covered. It is time to preview and get you ready for the national championship with Clemson and the number one team in the country when you talk about the LSU Tigers. Delighted to have with us for the very first time tonight, that is sports writer from CBSSports.com, Mr. Sonny Shipp. Happy New Year, Sonny. Good to have you with us.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Happy New Year to y'all, too.
Thank you so much. Well, we are ready for the big showdown, the 2020 college football playoff night in New Orleans. LSU hoping to win its first college football playoff title and first national title since 2007, the season of the BCS era. So before we preview the big game, take us back to a week ago. And how were the Tigers able to completely dominate my Oklahoma Sooners?
Oh, geez. I think the biggest takeaway was that, you know, just when you thought that you had seen the very best that Joe Burrow could bring to the table, it's like, wow. You know, he comes out, fires 7 touchdown passes, you know, runs for another one. And just the way that I had a feeling that they would be focused when they came out for it, but you thought that maybe with their first time being there, you know, being in the college football playoff, that you would see a little bit of jitters. But instead of that, I mean, you saw nothing but what I saw was just confidence, swagger, and it's what they've had all year long. But you just thought that at some point, you know, that the moment was just going to catch up to them to where they had to just step back and regroup a little bit. And I really thought that they would have that moment early on against Oklahoma. But from the opening snap, it was just, you know, they were just laser focused, confident. And like I said, I mean, just, you know, as close to cocky as you could possibly be.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. And talking about Joe Burrow, I mean, he avoids the Heisman slump. Forget that Heisman jinx. I mean, he really did come out and executed so strong right from the start and set the tone. And as we look at his numbers, I mean, he's had, what, 55 touchdown passes this season. In your mind, Sonny, what makes him so special?
Well, you hear a lot about, you know, when they talk about his traits, they talk about the toughness, they talk about, you know, how confident he is, how composed he is, that things just don't really, things don't really bother him. But I think the thing that probably makes him, you know, so good is how well prepared he is. And when you look at that preparation, you look at the time that he puts in on the practice field, the time that he puts into studying film, I mean, he does everything that, you know, that NFL quarterbacks are having to do on a weekly basis, except he's doing it at the college level. He's not going out, not doing, you know, he really looked at this, at his 2 years in Baton Rouge as more like a job as opposed to a college experience, like you get when you get 18, 19, and 20-year-old kids on campus. So I think that preparation that he has, being a coach's kid, his understanding of the game and what it takes to reach that highest level, you know, when you put all of those things in there with his competitive nature, with his athleticism, with his skill set, you just really have the good makeup of a quarterback, in my opinion.
You know, a couple of weeks ago, my producer and I, Brendan Riley, we were talking about Joe Burrow and just how impressed we were with his Heisman speech. What were your takeaways in what he shared and just his composure and how heartfelt it was?
whenever you have someone like a guy like Joe Burrow, you always wonder if you're truly getting
is it authentic?
See,
yeah.
Yeah, to see who the guy is. And I think that what people saw when he made that Heisman speech, because I get asked all the time, is that, man, you know, is Joe Burrow, is he really that down to earth? Is he really that laid back? Is he really, is what you see on TV what you get in real life? And I tell you, and I always say yes. You know, whether it's us interviewing him at player interviews, whether it's ESPN, whether it's, you know, Fox News, whoever mm-hmm. it is that he treats the local guys, you know, the regional guys, the national guys, he treats everyone the same. And you really have to credit, as a parent of two little kids myself, you know, you really have to respect the job that his parents did in bringing him up. And, you know, when you win the Davey O'Brien Award, the Johnny Unitas Award, the Heisman Trophy, you name it, all of these awards, and you're still so humble and just grateful for the little opportunities that you've gotten. The way that he thanked Ed Orgeron and how Ed Orgeron took a chance on him and things like that, I mean, that's almost something that you expect from a Hollywood script, because in the back of your mind, you're thinking like, who wouldn't want to take a chance on a guy like you, you know? And so it was one of those things to where it's the only Heisman speech that I've gone back and watched more than once.
Very nice. Hey, the sports writer with CBSSports.com, also 24/7 Sports, covers LSU. That is Sonny Shipp is with us, SB Nation Radio. Give him a follow. That's right, at Twitter, at Sonny Shipp 247. So let's get your thoughts on, you know, coming into that game against Oklahoma, what did you anticipate? Did you think it would be a complete demolition, because they just manhandled Oklahoma 63-28 in the semifinals in the Peach Bowl?
No, and you know, I'll be honest. I think when we did our staff predictions the day before kickoff, I think I picked like 41-30 LSU.
Okay, yeah.
You know, so I thought OU. You know, I thought OU would score some points and stuff. I thought that LSU might bog down a little bit, have to settle for three-pointers instead of touchdowns, kind of like they did against Auburn. But, you know, they were just clicking so much on offense. And then you didn't really know what to expect with the running game. I knew that Clyde Edwards-Helaire wasn't going to be able to give them much at all, and that if he would be used, that it would be more as a pass blocker or as a decoy, just because they had to think ahead to if they beat Oklahoma. You have to be able to have him ready for Clemson. So you knew you were going to see a lot of Chris Curry, Tyrion Davis-Price, and John Emery at running back, three freshman running backs. But for Chris Curry to get in there and run the ball as well as he did, I mean, he looked like a man possessed out mm-hmm. there. He hit the hole so hard, and he was so explosive and just ran just very tough and very physical that once you started seeing that, then it was like, okay, you know what? The running game is going to be fine if LSU continues to score points like this, and you're going to be able to sit Clyde Edwards-Helaire. And, you know, so that was an unknown as far as how the running game would pan out. And then you wondered about the Oklahoma rushing attack, you know, one of the best rushing attacks in the country. You had a guy like Jalen Hurts who didn't have the same skill set as Ole Miss quarterback John Rhys Plumlee, who really torched the LSU defense. But he was close enough to where he could make guys miss, and you wondered if that would be an element of the game that LSU would have problems with again. But they really played better against the run than I expected that they would. And, you know, they were really able to, you know, they were able to get that pass rush on Jalen Hurts early on and get enough pressure to kind of keep him off balance a little bit. And that helped him in being able to cover CeeDee Lamb down the field. So, you know, that the LSU run game, running the ball as effectively as it did, being able to stop Oklahoma as effectively as they did, and get a pass rush, those were all some things that I think that I thought at least were some unknowns going into the game.
LSU beat writer with CBSSports.com, also 24/7 Sports. That is Sonny Shipp with us tonight, SB Nation Radio. Okay, so we've talked a lot about LSU's offense. Let's shift gears. We got to talk about the defense, the speed, the aggressiveness, the overall outstanding play, because it really did set the tone from the start, kept Oklahoma in check, and they finished with only 322 yards of offense, which was, oh, by the way, ouch, the lowest total of the season. I mean, that defense really set the tone.
Yeah, and I think it starts with with being healthy up front and on the back end with Grant Delpit. Since Grant Delpit was able to sit out the Arkansas game, he came back the next week against Texas A&M, played against Georgia, played against Oklahoma, and he's finally healthy from an ankle that has kind of been just a pain in the butt for him all year. Not anything that really kept him sidelined, but you could just tell he wasn't the Grant Delpit that he was in 2018 when he was a unanimous All-American. So getting him healthy on the back end was big. And then when you look at, Caleb on Chason, former five-star recruit out of Texas, played last year in the season opener against Miami, registered a sack, then tore his ACL. He was out for the year. And so it took a little bit for him to work off some rust and for him to kind of play his way back into game shape. But here of late, I mean, he's just been, he's been that pass rushing menace that LSU thought that he was going to be. Last year, Ed Orgeron said that he felt that Chason would have a chance to break Arden Key's sack record, 12 and a half in a year. But of course, once he went down in that Miami game and never got back on the field, you didn't know exactly, if he would have that explosiveness coming into 2019. And it took a little while for him to get there, but having him healthy up front has really given them has really given the defensive line that that explosive pass rusher that really they've been missing for a few years now. The LSU is huge up front. They play with, they've got 300+ pounders on the defensive line, and so they're built to stop. They're built to stop those north-south running games. That's the it was just finding a consistent pass rush has kind of hampered them throughout the year, but now they're able to get that. So I think that's been a big key to the defensive turnaround.
Okay, getting you ready for the national championship, Clemson Tigers, number one team of the country, LSU, ESPN, 8 o'clock kickoff Eastern time on Monday night. So moving forward, when we talk about this game and preview it, what does it mean to the state of Louisiana to be playing for the national championship?
Well, LSU doesn't play for a national championship anywhere but New Orleans. You go back to 1958 when they won their first national title. They ended that season against Clemson in the Sugar Bowl. 2003, they beat Oklahoma in the Superdome.
I was there.
2007, they beat Ohio State in the Superdome.
Yep.
2011, they lost to Bama in the Superdome. So it's like, hey, LSU's not going to play for a national championship unless it's in New Orleans. So, but as far as the state, I mean, it couldn't be, it's been such a ride for this LSU team that, fans have, LSU's had winning teams. I mean, they went 10-3 last year, finished number 6 in the country after beating UCF in the Fiesta Bowl. They've had teams that have contended for national titles to where, they were just derailed once they, when they went and lost Alabama amidst that 8-game losing skid they were in prior to this year. So for all of that, for everything, you beat Alabama, you have a quarterback and you have a passing game that, may go down as the most explosive passing game in college football history if it continues against Clemson. For all of that to happen in the same year, I think just it's nothing that Tiger fans could have imagined. And so for all of that to, it's like taking everything, making a good gumbo down in Louisiana, and then boom, it's all in New Orleans.
That's right. I mean,
you've got everything that they've been waiting for. They've been waiting for a passing offense. They've been waiting to beat Alabama. They've been waiting for, for Ed Orgeron to shed the label that some had placed on him of, this guy didn't deserve to be at LSU. It should have been Jimbo Fisher. It should have been Tom Herman. It should have been whoever. And so for them to be able to shed all of that, go back, win the SEC championship, beat Oklahoma the way that they did, have a chance to end Clemson's, nation best 29-game win streak. It's just, and for it all to culminate in Louisiana, I mean, you couldn't draw up a better screen, better script than that.
Getting you ready for the national championship, Sonny Shipp, the sports writer with CBSSports.com. We'll be right back after this quick break.
SB Nation AM.
Isn't Lori Loughlin her husband like gajillionaires? Is she really going to see Hard Time at San Quentin?
No. She's going to the country club prison.
Yeah, she's going to be in the posh prison where they actually have routine manis and pedis scheduled for you.
She's going to, like, the Goodfellas prison where they were allowed to bring in bread and wine and
exactly.
all that good stuff. She's not, like, making license plates or whatever, like, breaking rocks. She ain't doing that nonsense. No chance.
And by the way, just real quick, if you knew what her setup is going to be in prison would be yours, you know, I mean, just the posh prison lifestyle, would you opt to go? I'm thinking about it like, you know what? I think I would. That'd be a nice vacation.
Why not? Just if I knew I didn't have to worry about getting shanked.
Yeah. Or dropping the soap.
Right.
SB Nation AM with Tony D. Weekday mornings from 6 to 10 Eastern on SB Nation Radio. College football bowl action returns to Mobile, Alabama.
Wide open man down the right sideline, caught.
Monday, January 6th for the 21st annual Lending Tree Bowl. This year, the 10-3 Louisiana Ragin' Cajuns take on the Mid-American Conference champion, Miami of Ohio Redhawks.
That's going to be a touchdown.
The Lending Tree Bowl, live from Mobile, Alabama. Monday, January 6th. Coverage starts at 7 p.m. Eastern, right here on the SB Nation Radio Network. College football bowl action returns to Mobile, Alabama.
Wide open man down the right sideline, caught.
Monday, January 6th for the 21st annual Lending Tree Bowl. This year, the 10-3 Louisiana Ragin' Cajuns take on the Mid-American Conference champion, Miami of Ohio Redhawks.
That's going to be a touchdown.
The Lending Tree Bowl, live from Mobile, Alabama. Monday, January 6th. Coverage starts at 7 p.m. Eastern, right here on the SB Nation Radio Network. This is Straight Heat.
This is what the Cowboys have become. A team that has no heart. They have no guts. They have no backbone. They are the spitting image of their head coach. And Jerry Jones, who's always been a pioneer, always been the guy who's going to put his stamp on things, the guy who's going to make it work, Jerry all of a sudden lost the cojones. All of a sudden, that guy doesn't have the guts to get rid of a bum head coach who's dragging his team down. As long as Jerry continues to leave things the way they are, he is accepting the train wreck that his team has become. Super Bowl aspirations? Only if they're playing on Madden.
Straight Heat with Patrick Creighton. Weekdays from 1 a.m. to 6 a.m. Eastern on SB Nation Radio. SB Nation Radio. This is the Big E Sports Show on SB Nation Radio, live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Houston. Here's Alyssa Walker-Campbell.
Hey, welcome back. Hour 2, SB Nation Radio, the Big E Sports Show. Right now, let's continue and get you ready for the national title game, LSU-Clemson, with Sonny Shipp from CBSSports.com. Purple and gold, they are going to be rocking. So take us through as far as what has the preparation been like over the past week, because they will face a very good football team in Clemson.
Yeah, and it was a lot of, okay, you know, giving the guys a few days off to get their legs back. They started practicing again. Wednesday was the first real practice. They'll practice Wednesday all the way through Sunday. And then they'll obviously go again. They'll have a day off, and then they'll obviously go, you know, all the way leading up to the game. But, you know, when you look for storylines, when you look for things of saying, okay, if this team has this, how is this team going to neutralize it? I mean, it starts right there with, you know, the LSU passing game, which is number two in the country, you know, the best quarterback in the country, facing a defense, you know, and an offense that leads the nation in scoring, facing a defense that leads the nation in stopping opponents as far as scoring goes. I think it's 11.5 points or 12.5 points Clemson allows, and then the number one pass defense in the country. And so you've got LSU's best. You've got Clemson's best. And, you know, it's not a situation like we had with LSU and Oklahoma where, okay, LSU's got, you know, the passing attack. Oklahoma has the rushing attack. I mean, this is best against best that's going to be going at it
every
time those units are on the field.
Absolutely. LSU, Clemson, 8 o'clock. Eastern time kickoff on ESPN, national championship game, the college football playoff. And we are looking so forward to that big game. Always a true pleasure to have with us. That is Sonny Shipp. Give him a follow on Twitter, SonnyShipp247, the sports writer at CBSSports.com. True pleasure. Thank you so much, Sonny. We look forward to catching up some more in 2020.
Yes, always a pleasure.
That, of course, was Sonny Shipp from CBSSports.com. A big thank you to all of our guests and our lineup. We'll see you next weekend for the biggest, the best in sports, the Big E Sports Show. Don't drink and drive. So long, everybody.